Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
The latest tips and equipment to improve your game.
Is it home?
The latest from the leaderboards and your favorite courses. This is Golf in the Northwest, an action-packed hour about everything golf. Now, here's your host for Golf in the Northwest, Jason Swigard.
And a fine good morning to you all as it is U.S. Open weekend. And I think it is safe to say through 36 holes, the winner so far has been Oakmont Country Club in the USGA. As three players will start the day in red numbers. They will tee off after noon. But glad you are with us here. We will assess the carnage that occurred in the first two rounds. As Will Ortner here with me again. How much of this have you taken in? I know you've been put into spot duty up and down the station here this week, but
I've gotten a decent amount in. I haven't really watched anything with commentary, so everything is just what have I been able to look up?
Oh, well, that's actually an interesting way to watch this one because, yeah, visually it's, you know, and Oakmont is known for it. This is their 10th U.S. Open. Mm-hmm. So the USGA loves the setup from both a able to accommodate all of the stuff that goes on site with the US Open. I don't know if you saw it, they showed the merchandise tent that they bring out for that is ginormous. It's like a mini convention center that they set right. up. So they want space for that. But obviously, the way that the course sets up, they're able to get it out lengthwise to where they want it. The par threes are ridiculous. There's only two par fives. They're both over 600 yards. It's just wild, and the mayhem has commenced. But we will get into the leaderboard. We will hear from several of the different players, most of the ones up near the top of the leaderboard, and just get their sense. And then you and I maybe will dabble and see, okay, where do we think we might be able to spot some value going into the weekend there based on the current odds at DraftKings for those of you here in Oregon. You'd have to go up to – well, you'd have to place your bets before you go home, big wheel bets.
Yeah, well, hey
– or you can go to A-Lane.
I would be lying if I have – if I said I haven't driven across just to place a bet down or two.
Yeah, well, you're not far.
No, it's a nice little 10-minute drive, and then half the time,
I'll do some sales tax-free shopping.
Well, see, here's what I do. I go on the waterfront, go for a nice little walk, or a nice little run, get a couple miles in.
There you go.
Then I'm doing something healthy.
There you go.
I'm having fun and doing something healthy.
Beautiful.
It's the right way to do it.
We do have a guest today. Jamie Hall is one of the instructors at the Pacific Northwest Golf Academy up in Issaquah. But one of the biggest events here in the local section was out at Aspen Lakes out in Central Oregon, the Oregon Open winner, and it is Jamie Hall. 12 under for 54 holes, won the individual championship as well as his team winning. So we will talk to him. He's a former collegiate golfer. Went a couple different places, but finished up at Seattle U. He's a Pacific Northwest native, Seattle native. So we'll get his thoughts. It's quite a facility that they've got up there with a number of very successful, accomplished collegiate golfers that spent some times out on some of the smaller tours, but they've put together a facility there in Issaquah. So we'll talk to him kind of about instruction at that upper level, but we'll use some of the things that we're seeing here from the U.S. Open. You know, if you compete at any level, the Royal Oaks Invitational just happened last week as well, which is one of the more known local area club tournaments that goes on. And so when the greens are slick and they grow the rough out, all of those things for, you know, your average, you know, 14-15 handicap player out there, how do you go practice those things? How do you, other than just to see if you can do it, but how do you have meaningful practice trying to work on the obscure shots, the once-off shots? Because obviously when your job is to be a professional golfer, you will have the time at some point to go, you know, on the practice rounds on a course or somewhere where you know you are potentially likely to hit it. At some point, you can go do that. Well, we can't, you know, we can't afford to do that. Don't have the time, don't have the facilities, the access to go do that. So we'll talk to him a little bit about that. Also, being up there in the Seattle area, we'll get his thoughts on some of his favorite courses available to the public up in the Puget Sound area. If you're going up to Seattle for whatever, family, friends, events, whatever, if you want to take the clubs, where's a good spot, maybe some value to get up in there. So a lot going on, but yes, the focus of this show will clearly be the U.S. Open. So much to get into, so let's not waste any more time. Let's go inside the ropes.
It's time for an insider's look at the leaderboards, the latest on all tours, plus local golf events and golf news. This is Inside the Ropes, part of Golf in the Northwest.
All right, the LPGA Tour is in action this week. They are up at Blythefield Country Club in Belmont, Michigan, one of their longstanding events, the Meyer LPGA Classic for Simply Give. Four-way tie for the lead. Nice leaderboard. H.G. Choi of Korea tied with Carlotta Segonda, Celine Boutier, and newcomer Karis Davidson from Australia. They are all 8-under par. A logjam at 7-under includes Lexi Thompson, Bronte Law, Nana Kurtz-Madsen, Minji Lee. So a very, very nice leaderboard there. Lexi Thompson playing as a former champion. So able to be in this one as long as she wants to be. And I think you might see her do this now that she has retired from full-time playing on the tour. But she'll have a few favorite events, either sponsors that have been supportive of her throughout career, past tournaments that she's won. And so when she can pick and choose and decide, okay, I'm going to gear up and play, clearly shows that she can still get it done, 68-69. For her first two rounds. So it's nice to see her there, as the LPGA Tour could use a little star power right now as Mr. Kessler settles into his new role as commissioner and they try to figure out how to bring the stars back out. But Carlotta Segonda, Celine Boutier, both established stars and former winners on the LPGA Tour. H.G. Choi won 12 times on the Korean Tour and is looking for her first, but she's 23rd in the points race, the season-long points race there. So the newcomer, Karis Davidson, is 354th in the world Rolex rankings, but's made 5 cuts and 8 starts, joined the tour back in 2022, trying to look for her first victory there. So you'll get coverage on Golf Channel later this afternoon. And congratulations to last week's winner, Jennifer Kupcho. It had been 3 years since she had won on tour, got her 4th victory. If you remember, she won the very first ever Augusta National Women's Amateur back in 2019. She was the NCAA champion at Wake Forest, wire to wire in 2018, and so much was thought that she would come out and be one of those American stars. She's been on several Solheim Cup teams, but really wondering where her game had gone, if she was going to be able to compete at the highest levels again. And so I think a lot of relief there for her to get a big victory. Birdied 3 the last 5 holes to kind of come a little bit back in the pack and take that in. So much needed, and getting her game in shape for the Solheim Cup that they will compete again in 2026. So she was a member of the 23 and 24 teams. And, you know, when she gets her game going, certainly one that can get hot and get on a roll. All right, let's get to the leaderboard at Oakmont. Sam Burns, an amazing 5 under 65, tied for the third lowest 18-hole round in Oakmont U.S. Open history. And he surged to the top of the lead. He went out early. Certainly, I know the overall scoring doesn't show much difference between the morning and afternoon rounds, but the guys that were able to go low predominantly played in the morning, whether it was on Thursday or Friday. J.J. Spaun had his 66 playing early on Thursday and struggled a little bit more with a 2 over 72 on Friday playing in the afternoon. So Bernsie there at 3 under par. J.J. Spaun at 2 under, Victor Hovland 1 under, your only three players in red numbers to start the day. Adam Scott, the only player that was able to shoot par or better in both rounds, even par 70s, and he is the only former major winner in the top seven right there. Brooks Koepka is tied for 8th at plus 2, a former, obviously, U.S. Open winner, looking for a 6th major of his career. He's got 2 U.S. Opens, 3 PGA championships. He is desperate, desperate, desperate to find a way back to the PGA Tour. I think him and Brooksy, more than any of the guys that went to play LIV, while they aren't going to give the money back, They will admit if you gave them truth serum at some point, yeah, probably shouldn't have done that. Probably should have stayed on the PGA Tour and competed, and they would have won their share. But stayed in that competition week to week, especially with the signature events, they would have had. Plus those two, I don't think they. You know, the difference between making, you know, if they made $20 million in a season or get a big payday here plus their sponsor stuff versus the $300 or whatever they got to go play on the LIV Tour, those two don't strike me as – it doesn't affect their lives all that much.
I think with Bryson, too, like he – they've asked him, like, hey, your contract's up. And he goes, yeah, we'll have to negotiate and we'll see what we're going to do. It's like, dude, just went with the money. It's fine. But it's probably the wrong move.
I mean, they're not going to give it back. But I think in retrospect, I think they thought LIV was going to be something way more than it actually was. So there's disappointment there. And they would probably admit, yeah, I took a risk and it didn't pay off, I think is how they would phrase it. The early players are on the course. Rory McIlroy, who birdied 2 of his last 4 holes to just make the cut. The cut was plus 7, which is absurd. And that goes to what Oakmont demonstrated. So he's on the course right now with a couple of pars. And this will be the amazing thing, and it's curious to watch. Matthew Fitzpatrick is 1 under. He is the only player on the course here early that is in red numbers. He is through 7 holes. Everybody else, even or worse, that has started this morning. Harris English is plus 4 through 6. Hideki Matsuyama, plus 3 through 6. So if that's any indication, you know, is it a matter of who can avoid the most disaster and damage and maybe let other people slide by them going down, which is why I would keep an eye on Brooks Koepka. He managed to save it. He could have gone way south. He shot a 74 yesterday after a 268 to start, but he kept it there. Same thing with Adam Scott at an even par 70. They are strong enough to handle the length, strong enough to get themselves out of that ridiculous 5 1/4 inch rough, and smart enough to understand, okay, if I just pitch it back and play for a bogey, maybe I make a long putt and save par rather than bringing double, triple, or worse into play. And that's something that, for whatever reason, Rory still hasn't been able to bring himself, wrap it around to do. As for Sam Burns, he's simply on fire right now. He shot that 62 in the final round at the Canadian before this, lost in a playoff, but he was hot coming in. And we'll hear from him, some of the other leaders. Victor Hovland, there at one under, still looking for his first major. This could be it. Seems to have a great attitude. And that's something, as you start to look at all of these players up there, there is a common, I don't know, out of the top 10, there seems to be, of the players that we know, a common personality trait that we see viscerally that lends themselves to being able to survive what Oakmont has provided. So let's get into it. Let's hear from them. Thoughts from Will and I on what we've seen, what this course is all about, as it is U.S. Open Week. We'll talk to Jamie Hall from the Pacific Northwest Golf Academy coming up at 8:30. It's Golf in the Northwest on 1080 The Fan.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hitting them straight for 12 years. This is Golf in the Northwest on 1080 The Fan.
8:17 here this morning. We'll talk to Jamie Hall from the Pacific Northwest Golf Academy coming up at 8:30 after he won the Pelzer Golf Oregon Open out at Aspen Lakes this past week. We'll talk about that, some of their instruction tips. His days as a competitive player, both collegiately and some time on some of the smaller tours. He will join us coming up in a little bit. But we're enjoying the U.S. Open here. I think we're enjoying it a lot more than a lot of the players are. But we talked about the leaderboard. Just three players in red numbers. It's just, you know, the carnage was unbelievable. Plus seven being the cut number. But Sam Burns, we mentioned, let's start with him. He is in the lead. He had an amazing 65, 5 under 65 there in round two, and then he watched all afternoon everybody come back to him. It was Tristan, got to get his name right here. Where is it? Tristan Lawrence of South Africa. He had it at 6 under early in his round, and then 7 over for, I think, the last 13 holes. He falls back to plus one. He's still in contention. He's tied for six with Victor Perez, who had just the second hole-in-one in U.S. Open history at Oakmont, and this is their 10th one. That tells you how hard the par threes are. But let's hear from Sam Burns. I think I can play this. Just talking to Golf Channel just about how well he played given the conditions in round two.
Yeah, I think I played really well yesterday. Tough finish, but I think today was just about kind of clean slate and really trying to kind of reframe yesterday into what I did really well. And I played a lot of really good golf. So try to focus on that coming into today. I knew, playing in the morning, the golf course was still going to have a little moisture in it. You could attack some certain pins. So I was able to do that early and then played a really nice back nine.
And that was the key. And that's interesting this morning because it did play was suspended actually late yesterday. They had some lightning, some rain. There was a little drizzle. We saw some umbrellas this morning. So there was a little bit of moisture on the course, but it does not appear early on that it's going to benefit them going after these pins, which, and if you look at the pin placement, it's absurd. They're all tucked. They're all in corners or near bunkers, tucked into bunkers. There's only one hole. The sixth hole is where the pin is the closest to the middle of the green. It's 11 in from the right edge and 27 paces deep. That's the pin that's the closest to, you know, the middle of a green. And the sixth hole being the par three, 200-yard par three. So we'll see there. But if they're going to get a chance to go for it and somebody's going to make a move, it's going to be interesting to see who it is. Your first round leader, J.J. Spahn, was the only bogey-free player in round one. couldn't follow it up, but he kept himself in contention with a 2 over 72. So he is 2 under, but he talked about his ability to go out in that first round and put up a number.
I kind of came out here with, you know, no prior history at Oakmont, not really knowing what to expect, even U.S. Open-wise. I mean, this is only my second one, and I don't know if that freed me up in any aspect, but I just tried to kind of take what the course gave me. I hit a lot of good shots and try to capitalize on any birdie opportunities, which, you know, aren't very many out here. But I scrambled really well, too, which is a huge component to playing well at a U.S. Open, let alone shoot a bogey-free round. And, yeah, I'm just overly pleased with how I started the tournament.
Yeah, and he's doing what everybody has said you got to do, which is hit fairways to give yourself a chance to get to the green and have a chance to two-putt and get out of there. Spawn is tied for 5th in fairways hit, 19 of 28. Colin Morikawa, he's tied with Colin Morikawa. And then you do that, combine that with greens and regulation. Now, that's the amazing part. Rory McIlroy is up there. His problem is putting, quite frankly. But he is 9th in greens and regulation at 28 for 39. He's on the course this morning. Victor Hovland, this is why you need to keep an eye on him and Adam Scott. They are both 75% greens in regulation. And the more chances you give yourself to make pars, that's what you got to get comfortable with. Par is a good score. You can't always go and get after it in that way. For Victor Hovland, he's talking about how different, especially on the East Coast, you don't see a lot of Poana greens. We're very familiar with it in the Northwest, but when they're over there in the East, they don't see it, certainly don't see it playing a lot in Texas and Florida. But playing these Poana greens, Victor Hovland talked about how difficult that makes these courses.
Yeah, I mean, we don't play a whole lot of Poana greens, and I mean, it's just amazing how many holes or how many greens you can have that are sloped front to back. And usually that's a pet peeve of mine. I almost automatically think it's a bad hole if it's sloped front to back, but somehow they make it work here. It's I think it's a fun challenge. It's a fun test. You know, but it's just super dicey because you obviously want to be below the hole, but on holes like number one, it's kind of hard to do, especially with today's pin. So it's just a lot of strategy. You have to be super precise on your distance control and obviously speed. Yeah, just your lag putting is just the importance of lag putting goes up significantly compared to other weeks.
And that's been the key. And where these pins are placed, how the slopes work. And you've seen guys, we've seen all Rory, Scottie Scheffler. I think the biggest issue is combined with that thick rough, how many times we've seen guys just absolutely duff little chips because they know they can't just blast it out of there. They're not going to get any spin coming out of that rough. And so they can't fly it. And then based on where they are, if they're on the wrong side of the greens, they're trying to be so delicate and whiff. And while we as amateur duffers are used to that feeling, it throws them off completely. Let's talk to Scottie Scheffler, who did that a few times, and he just gave his thoughts on what Oakmont is presenting to them this week.
I mean, it's one of those places. There's not a ton of strategy, I would say. It's just you step up there on the tee box and be like, what club can I get into this fairway? And then you try and hit that club in the fairway. And if you don't, it's like, all right, how am I going to get out of this rough and get the ball back into the fairway so I can have a shot at the green? It's not like an overly strategic golf course where you know there's a lot of club options off the tee and stuff like that. It's just a golf course where you stumble on the tee box, you look at that fairway, and you're like, all right, let's get the ball in that thing.
And that's kind of the attitude a lot of them have to have coming in. It's certainly one that Brooks Koepka has maintained over the years, but he talked about preparing for this and a little tough love from his coach.
Brooks, can you give me a clean snippet of what that scolding from Pete sounded like?
I'll put it this way. JT thought he had to come check on me in the bunker. We were in there for about 45 minutes. He was on the other side of the green, and he... I saw him Monday night. We were at a Rolex function, and he was like, I was worried. Your head was down. But, yeah, Pete, I'll keep that between us. I think it's I wasn't happy with it, but it was something I think you need to hear, or I needed to hear at the right time. And it's not the first time he's done it. He's not afraid to.
When was the last one?
Aaron Hills.
Oh, that long ago?
Yeah. So I don't like having yes people around me. I just want somebody to tell me the truth, tell me what's going on, what they see. And if I start swaying from being Brooks Koepka, then I want someone to call me out on it. And he did a hell of a job on it.
So there you go. The caddies and swing coaches right there. And that's why Brooks appreciates these events. That's why he's won 5 majors but doesn't have a trove of just regular PGA Tour victories, is because he knows how to gear up when it gets tough, and that's what these guys have to do. But you look at who's at the top of the leaderboard. Burns, J.J. Spaun, Victor Hovland, Adam Scott, Ben Griffin, Brooks Koepka, Russell Henley right now. Those are guys that are all the only one that's maybe outside of that personality-wise, Siwoo Kim, what we've seen from Tristan Lawrence so far. They are about as even-keeled and emotionless on the course. Now, they may run hot inside, certainly, at times, but they just seem to move up to the next shot, try to figure it out and make the best swings that they can. And you see guys further down. The fact that Tyrrell Hatton's at +3 is pretty amazing. Keegan Bradley can run hot, but he's been playing great. Spieth can get on himself. He's at +5. So it'll be interesting to see Rahm there at +4. But they can certainly have those blow-up holes, and that's what you have to avoid today if you are going to try and make a run and get near the top of the leaderboard by the end of the day. How you go about doing that, I don't think it's going to be anybody going super low. I'd be shocked if we get another 66 or 65 today. If you can be even 69, 70, you may see everybody else start to go past you, sliding down the board. Again, as we look at the scores, Mark Leishman just started. He had a birdie. Matt Fitzpatrick is -1. That's it of about 20, 24 players on the course right now. Just 2 have managed to start in red numbers. So we will come back to the U.S. Open, see what the odds are to end up the show, get some thoughts from Big Will Betts, who he might look at. But when we come back, we'll be joined by the winner of the 2025 Pelzer Golf Oregon Open, Jamie Hall, PGA Associate from the Pacific Northwest Golf Academy. Get his thoughts on playing in these competitive tournaments from his days out on the mini tour at the Division I level at collegiate golf, and now how he has taken that to the instruction side of things of golf, and he will join us next. We make the turn. It's Golf in the Northwest on 1080 The Fan.
Which new driver is best for your game? Who makes the best golf gear? Where should you take your next golf vacation? Which local course should you get to know better? This is the Business of Golf every week on Golf in the Northwest on 1080 The Fan.
All right, we are making the turn here. Center and Saint following us. Rashad stepping in, so it'll be Rashad and Will Ortner with you, recapping another wild finish to the NBA Finals, now tied up at 2 apiece. We'll see if we get any hockey out of them, setting up tonight's Game 5, which you will hear on The Fan starting at 4:30. And then you'll have Dodgers-Giants tomorrow night, Sunday Night Baseball, right here on The Fan. Coverage begins at 3 o'clock. But right now, we are extremely pleased to be having join us from up in the Puget Sound area, from the Pacific Northwest Golf Academy, the winner of the 2025 Pelzer Golf Oregon Open, Jamie Hall, longtime competitive golfer up in the Seattle area. Spent some time at the University of Hawaii at Hilo, but then came back, finished at Seattle University, and all conference awards there. Spent some time on various professional tours in the United States and Canada, but has since come back and started to parlay a lot of that knowledge to the next generation of golfers. Jamie Hall here with us this morning. Good morning, Jamie. How are things up there in the Puget Sound area?
Morning, Jason. That was quite the intro. Thank you so much. Things are good up here. You know, I was able to see some buddies last night, had a few beers to celebrate, and no, it's been good.
Well, yeah, over at Aspen Lakes over there in Central Oregon, the weather has been outstanding. And so you were able to take advantage and 8-under-64 in round one and then just kind of rode out the lead to win by 3 strokes at 12-under-par. And you had a few of your fellow colleagues there from the academy joining you. How was the play out there at Aspen Lakes, and how was the competition?
Competition was good. The course is in great shape. Super firm greens. A lot of altitude out in Bend, which is kind of foreign for us in the Seattle area. So I had to adjust to that on Monday. But then Tuesday came around. Like you said, was able to shoot 64. Started off 5-under through 8, which was nice to kind of get a tournament started well. I've been kind of struggling out of the gates early in my most recent tournament. So just to see the 5-under early was great. And then just was able to kind of hang on and make a couple birdies and an eagle coming in, which was great. And it was nice to have my brother playing with me as well, my Will Hall. He's always a good guy to have next to you. We kind of push each other in competition, and he's always there to pick me up when I'm down and kind of keep me humble, that's for sure.
Well, and I think that's always an overlooked part of competition is who you are grouped with in any particular thing. We see it on the PGA Tour. There are some noted quick players, some noted human rain delays out there. And obviously being able to play, you know, when you're able to play with somebody that maybe was a college teammate or a family member or those sorts of things, how much more comfortable does that make you just standing over the ball and being in competition and tending not to worry about some of the things that you might worry about otherwise?
Oh, it's huge. It's like, I mean, because you know kind of the rhythm of their game, how they play, kind of, you know, when you can make a joke here and there. So it really does help. And like you said, a lot of guys out there tend to play a little bit slower, and I don't think I've ever taken a practice swing. So I'm definitely on the faster end of golfers. So it's nice to have guys you're familiar with for sure.
There you go. Well, for those of us down here in Portland that maybe are unfamiliar with your facility, it's up there near Issaquah, the Pacific Northwest Golf Academy. How did you come about coming to their services, and what all is the Pacific Northwest Golf Academy about?
So in, I think September 2022, I got a text from one of my former teammates and good buddies, Blake Snyder, saying that they had a spot to teach at the academy if I was interested. And I never really thought about teaching, but I was kind of wrapping up my playing career and deciding kind of what I wanted to do next. Definitely wanted to stay in the golf industry somehow. And I feel like teaching was the next best bet because I could still stay around the game, still compete. And so started there, like I said, September 2022. And we're an indoor facility. We just opened up a second location in Seattle. So we have 8 teachers, all really quality golfers, really quality people, and it's a great spot. I think we're slowly growing, and I'm excited for what the future holds for us.
Well, yeah, and you talk about your competitive days, obviously high school there at Seattle Prep, and then how much fun was it to play golf in Hawaii for a few years at Hawaii before coming back to Seattle U and finishing up? And I'm always curious, you know, you tried to go out, get on some of the mini tours in U.S. and Canada, and everybody's got that dream, man, if I could get a PGA Tour card. What's the breaking point to determining, okay, this may not get to where I want to get it to, but not letting the game break you to the point where you don't want anything to do with it?
Yeah. Well, first of all, UH Sheila was awesome. It was I was looking for schools out of high school, and I was just tired of being in cold weather. I'm a warm weather guy, and I took a visit out there. Yeah, absolutely, as we all do. And Coach Earl, to me, one of the greatest human beings I've ever met in my life, he kind of took me under his wing for 2 years and was able to kind of shape me as a golfer, and I feel like I owe him a lot. Haven't talked to him in a while, but I'd love to reach out one of these days. And then as for playing, I would say the biggest difference, honestly, the separator is just playing well in the bigger tournaments. Like, all the major events, I was able to win a couple, but when it came down to the Q schools and Monday qualifiers, I was always just 1 or 2 strokes short. And it's just making a putt here and there, maybe not making a mental mistake, not letting your mind lapse. That's the biggest thing. So you're out there for 5.5, 6 hours, and as you know, 1 stroke, 2 strokes can be the difference in making it or missing it. So it's just a little intangibles.
Well, and we're watching that now. I'm sure there's a TV with U.S. Open coverage on in any golf facility, golf course, all over the place. So as it goes then to instruction, and you are looking, and obviously with the backgrounds that the teachers have there, reading some of the bios of your fellow colleagues, all competitive golfers at high levels. If you're having, you know, the next generation junior golfers or younger golfers come in wanting to compete at those levels, how do you teach those things? There's all sorts of mechanics, and we've got, you know, the simulators and the amount of information and data that now we can retrieve instantaneously about golf swings to help kind of shape how to put a swing together is right there. But that mental side of it to continue to grind over the putt that might save bogey and avoid double bogey and keep you in a tournament or making a cut. How do you coach that?
You know, that's a good question. It's honestly, like, as you know, today's pretty data driven. There's not a lot of feel in the game anymore, which is kind of a bummer. I definitely play with a little more feel than others. So when I'm coaching my juniors, I like to tell them just get out and go play. Honestly, like, well, I'll teach mechanics here and there. But for the most part, it's just making sure that they know how to score. That's the biggest thing. You can't really replicate pressure when you're on the course.
No question. Chatting here with Jamie Hall, PGA Associate for the Pacific Northwest Golf Academy, winner of last week's, or I guess it was earlier this week, the Pelzer Golf Oregon Open out there at Aspen Lakes. And so now the other thing for us, you know, bogey golfers, you know, 15, 16, 17 handicaps out there that we like playing, but we're not scaring par anytime soon. We see these courses set up like Oakmont with this ridiculous rough and slope greens and all of those sorts of things. We know how professionals can take time and have all the access to go practice these things. How do us bogey golfers or high handicaps, how do we go and work on this and work on it effectively? I mean, we can throw golf balls down in 3-inch rough and try to hack them out of there, but we don't necessarily know what we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of like on course stuff, the biggest thing I would say is just course management, right? That you can control at least where you're trying to hit the ball. It doesn't go where you want it to. But like Scotty always talks about hitting it to the fat side of the green or missing on the side that has the most amount of green to work with, right? So it's just kind of knowing where your misses are, where you can miss it, where you can't miss it, and just kind of playing to maybe away from flags as opposed to going at them. And then in terms of practicing, I would say, I guess it's hard to, I don't know. That's a tough one.
Yeah, no, and it is tough. And that's why, and obviously you guys have an indoor facility, but I know you have a partnership with a course nearby. For people up in that area that are interested, that you can go work on things on, like those on-course management things, bunker play, you know, where you get the slopes in greens, that sort of thing. How far? I know you work a lot with simulators, and that technology development continues to go. Where has it gone, and what maybe is, because you're working with the manufacturers there, what's maybe the next iteration of simulators that will really help either to make them more accessible and more affordable to average golfers, or the next great piece of technology that really is going to innovate it further?
Yeah, I mean, so our academy worked with TrackMan technology, and they're kind of the first ones to spearhead the data-driven revolution that is professional golf and just golf in general right now. And I would say just the more we get advancements with this technology, that I feel like more companies are kind of compete, and then competition leads to cheaper prices, hopefully. And then we can have a bunch of simulators that people will be able to access at home that won't cost an arm and a leg as they can do at this
question.
Point.
And obviously, in the Pacific Northwest, we know, it's, there's a season there where it's just, unless you are a true diehard, it is tough to get out, whether it's simply too cold, wet and windy, whatever the case may be. Just very, very difficult to get out consistently. And for those that are on the other side of the mountains, whether it's central and eastern Washington, central Oregon, once it starts snowing, you just can't get out there and do that. So we will see more of these facilities. Chatting here with Jamie Hall, PGA Associate with the Pacific Northwest Golf Academy up there in Issaquah. For our friends down here in Portland, most of our listening audience, if they are headed up to the Puget Sound area, what are some of your favorite golf courses that are readily accessible for those of us that are public players?
Well, if you're looking for good quality budget golf, Gold Mountain out on the Olympic Peninsula is one of my favorite facilities. They got 36 holes out there. I can play two rounds for under $100. It's one of the most beautiful courses in the Northwest, I would say. Chambers Bay is obviously a great one, a little on the pricier side, but it's definitely worth it at least once. Home course down in DuPont as well. Up in the Seattle area, I mean, we're kind of a little bit strapped with public golf, unfortunately. But I grew up playing Jefferson Park, now Bill Wright Golf Complex, and that place always holds a special place in my heart. So.
Now, that's where Freddie Couples started playing. Is that isn't that correct? Do I have my history right?
You are correct.
There we go.
The house that Freddie built.
There you go. And then And there's some nicer courses there, too, out as you start to get up. They're a little more resort, I think, courses, if memory serves, out in Issaquah and up towards Snoqualmie.
Yeah, kind of as you go out to, it's called Suncadia Golf Resort, and it's a beautiful 36-hole facility, and that one's just a little bit outside of Seattle. I would say maybe 45 to an hour, but definitely worth the drive.
And then when you get down south here into Oregon, do you have a favorite course? Obviously, I think Aspen Lakes might go up to the top of the list after last week, but do you have a favorite area? Of course, outside of Bandon, we all know about that, but where's your favorite places to play down here in Oregon?
Aspen Lakes is the clear number one, but if I had to choose another one, I love Emerald Valley down in Crestwell, I believe.
Yep.
Love that track. Eastmoreland, another great public track. Love it out there. Heron Lakes. And then I was able to play Waverly a couple years ago in the U.S. Open qualifier, and that one's a pretty special track too. So
you guys
are blessed down there. It's,
We are as well as the public access to a lot of these courses is pretty special down here. Well, it was a special week for you. I know that's going to throw you up in the season long points race there in the Pacific Northwest section here of the PGA and your points list for the Player of the Year. Congratulations on that. For people that want to find out more about your instruction or your facilities up there with the Pacific Northwest Golf Academy, what's the best way to get in touch?
You can go to our website. It's pnwgolfacademy.com. It has kind of all our information on there. And my name's Jamie Hall if you need a lesson.
There you go. Well, thanks so much. Congratulations on the win this week. And thanks so much for joining us. And hopefully we can catch up with you down the road.
Awesome. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it.
There you go. Jamie Hall with the Pacific Northwest Golf Academy. We will come back. We will look at the leaderboard again at the U.S. Open as the players making their way onto the course. We're starting to get closer to the top of the leaderboard. Leaders won't tee off until 12:30-ish this afternoon, but we'll get an idea of how Oakmont is playing, how obnoxious it's going to be in round three. It certainly looks that way, and it'll be surprising, really, if anybody is under par at the end of the day, as we come down the stretch. It's Golf in the Northwest on 1080 The Fan.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Hitting them straight for 12 years. This is Golf in the Northwest on 1080 The Fan.
Jason Swigart back here with you, wrapping things up. Thanks again to Jamie Hall for joining us there. Next week, it'll be interesting. I will be out at Elk Ridge playing in their summer solstice tournament. And so we're going to set some things up, have some interviews for you out there. Will be here. We will have a show. And I will probably be phoning in if I can get service from the golf cart out there. But Ortner will be here. He'll run you through all of the leaderboards. But we will get to the show for you. We'll have something for you next week. It'll be a little interesting. Hope you enjoy it. As we look at the U.S. Open leaderboard here, leaders teeing off after noon. 12:02, it'll be Russell Henley and Tristan Lawrence. 11:51, it'll be Siwoo Kim and Brooks Koepka. And then you've got Victor Perez and Ben Griffin. Adam Scott and Victor Hovland will pair together. That will be a very comfortable pairing, and I would look for the third-round leader possibly to be one of those two. And then Sam Burns and J.J. Spahn in the final group, 12:35, Burns at 3-under par, J.J. Spahn at 2-under. That will probably be a pretty quiet group. I think Scott and Hovland might have a little chatta with them, but everybody will be focused as it's going to be a bear. Looking at this with just three players in red numbers after 36 holes, it's tied with the Olympic Club back in 2012. Webb Simpson, the winner there. Oakmont in 2007, in the last 35 years, was the only U.S. Open that did not have anybody under par through 36 holes. And Shinnecock Hills in 2018, just one player. So it's one of the toughest setups we've seen. And then there have only been three players in the 125-year history to come from outside the top 20 after 36 holes to win. Webb Simpson did it at the Olympic Club in 2012. He was tied for 29th. The other two, Lou Gramm in 1975 and Larry Nelson in 1983. And so if you are looking for an eventual champion to hoist that trophy on Sunday, you're only going down to everybody that's plus three or better. That will include Jason Day, Keegan Bradley, Tyrrell Hatton, Thomas Dietrich, Brooks Koepka, Russell Henley, Adam Scott, Ben Griffin, and then Burns, J.J. Spahn, Victor Hovland, the guys at the top of the leaderboard. And if you look at the odds, Sam Burns is right now your leader at plus 330, Victor Hovland plus 550, Ben Griffin plus 1,200. Scheffler is there at plus 800. He's such a heavy favorite overall, even though he's back at like 25th right now. He is at plus four, tied for 23rd. He'll tee off at 10 o'clock with Cameron Young. Morikawa, Rahm are plus four. I don't know if somebody can come from that deep. We will see what happens. Mark Leishman on the course. He's 2-under through three. He's at plus four. He and Matt Pitts, Corey Connors and Matt Fitzpatrick, the only players in red numbers here early. And some guys are quickly going the other way. Cam Davis and Harris English, plus seven so far, making the turn. Hideki Matsuyama at plus five. And so if you're looking to pick a winner there, let's see if we can get Big Will Betts hopping on here. How are you assessing how this is going to come down? Because it's looking to be carnage even more than the first 2 days here early in day three.
Honestly, right now, when I just pulled up the live odds. I bet Hovland to be a top 10 finisher, so I feel good about that. Everybody else is just like completely off the board, and I don't feel strongly about taking Burns or Spahn or Griffin just because they haven't been here before. Like, even though their odds are good, like right now you could take Burns at plus 330, which isn't great, but Spahn plus 700, Griffin plus 1200. Those are good odds, especially if you're getting them with basically 2 days left in the tournament. But you have a bunch of guys, it feels like, that they haven't done it. It's almost like basketball, right? Like, you have to go through your lumps in the NBA before you can win one.
I will say this course, and this is where I think it doesn't matter as much, because this course and this setup is so challenging. We saw yesterday Shane Lowry, that course get to him. At one point, he went to just pick up his ball, and he forgot to mark it. Yeah. He had to call a rules official over, and he took a one-stroke penalty, and it was just, this is such a mental grind. And so the course demands just to make pars, just to try to keep from falling further back. Mm-hmm. Your concentration on the next shot, that I think if their caddies and their coaches are talking to them, to just say, don't even look at the leaderboard and maybe the back nine on Sunday. And I think this will benefit all of these guys that haven't necessarily been in this position before, because the minute you start thinking about where you are in relation to the field or whatever, and you're not concentrating on making sure you put it in the fairway or put it on the right part of the green, where is the pin? Where are the slopes? And we've seen where they're downhill or uphill, front to back, left to right. You got to put it in the right quadrant and let the course almost a little link style like the Open Championship where you can use the ground to your advantage. But if you put it in the wrong spot or you mishit your irons and then you're in the rough and now you're just trying to not put up a huge number, I think that will benefit some of these guys that haven't won a major or a big tournament before. And I think that that's less of a factor specifically with this golf course than other majors at the Masters. Right. You know, Augusta in and of itself, it's not nearly as challenging as this course is.
No, this course is brutal right now. Now, I do want to tell you some pretty funny lines.
There you go.
Right now, where is Scotty on the leaderboard?
He's 23rd.
He's 23rd, so he's what, plus three, plus four?
Plus three.
You can get him at plus 800 to win the entire thing. He is the fourth.
Yep.
Highest odds to win the whole thing.
If you
That's
wanna,
insane.
Yeah, if you want to sprinkle a little change, you know, to dabble with a winner, Brooks is not a bad idea. He's plus 2,200. He's yep. actually done this before. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be, but he's one that's not, he's just trying to make pars. And if right. he gets a chance to make a birdie, drop one in. Ben Griffin has been on a heater lately. And he's one that, again, is just there to make pars, stay in it, and see if he can not sink as fast as everybody else. But I think the biggest thing is I would be shocked if anybody is under par at the end of today.
Yeah. I mean, this course has come out, and everyone talked about how hard the course was going to be, that the course was going to win. The course is winning.
The course is won.
Which is going to make Sunday awesome. Because it's
now,
not
I
about
hope
who
on
can...
Sunday, and the other thing is there is potential thunderstorms. That's the other piece of the puzzle, too. And that's why maybe somebody like Keegan Bradley or Scottie Scheffler or Brooks Koepka, if they can get out there far enough ahead of the leaders, and depending on how bad the weather is or delays, if they can get some holes in, they might be able to get themselves a cushion and work their way up there. It should be an absolutely fascinating weekend. NBC takes over the coverage here. At the top of the hour. So it'll be early coverage on USA on Sunday, and then NBC will have it. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. We hope that you have a little bit of golf in your weekend as well, and maybe introduce the game to the younger ones for the first time. It's always a proud, those of us that love the game, putting a club in a youngster's hand for the first time and seeing him hit that ball up in the air. It's a great thing. Thanks to Will Ortner. Rashad's up next with Sinner and Saint. We'll talk to you next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jason. Hit him straight.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.